Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. How you all doing? I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. And today's episode, my guest is Mikey Joysom. Now, I first saw Mikey perform when he was, and still is, the front man of David Devont and his spirit wife. He has performed under the name Mr. Solo. I think we even touch on this at the beginning of the episode, but Mikey's a very, very interesting, unique and fantastic frontman, if you ever see them perform. And I saw them perform again. I first used to watch them in the mid-90s, and then I watched them just before Christmas, and I thought, right, I'm going to reach out to Mikey because I know he's a fascinating guy, and I want to pick his brains on some records, and that's what we done. We recorded this during lockdown, so it was done remotely, although Mikey recorded his vocals, his end, and I done the same, so it should sound like a studio recording, and even though we done it face-to-face on the old Skype. Before I get on with the episode, I just want to say a big thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. And also a big thanks to 76, my producer, who's been producing these podcasts since day one. 130-odd episodes in now we are. So the best thing you can do, if you don't want to miss any more, is subscribe. That really does help. So if you can subscribe to the podcast, that'd be much appreciated. And if you've missed any, go and have a little rummage in the archives, because you'll find some amazing podcasts with all manner of musicians, producers, actors, comedians. There's loads to get your teeth stuck into. And if that's not enough, then I also have a Patreon page where I put up unique content and episodes over there each week. You can find out all about that at offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. All right, I think I'm done with the intro bits. Let's get straight on with the episode. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with Mikey Joysom. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out, because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year, and they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands, alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast, and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off The Beaten Track podcast. Let's get back to that podcast. It's Off The Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whippin. Okay, we are recording. Please welcome today's guest. It's Mikey Jorgensen. Hello.
Hello, Stu. Lovely to see you again.
It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has, yes. You haven't launched in and said, "Who am I speaking to?" which is quite refreshing. Or you might have said, "Mikey B. Jorgensen."
You've got quite an array of performing guises. You know, I did think maybe Vessel and
or The Vessel.
Mr. Solo.
Yeah.
Obviously, David Devant and his spirit wife.
Mikey
Jorgensen.
Lots. Yeah.
All that.
I get. It's all what I call matter flow. It's like just playing with everything like it's part of the material vitality of life. Carfax as well. That's another... Yeah, named after the centre of the town where I live. Yeah, but we.
I don't think we've seen each other for a while. We have met a few times. Me and our mutual friend Wayne came to watch your recent Water Rats show.
Oh, did Wayne come to that?
Yes. We was at the back. Thankfully, we're both sort of 6 foot three because it was a very busy affair, mate.
It was rammed. It was really nice to go back there, wasn't it? And re-experience what a glorious venue it can be, because we used to, as you probably know, we played there quite a lot, and then it became a sort of pay-to-play venue, which was a bit. Bit nasty, you know. You'd get calls to come and play, and then they sort of send you letters about how you've got to bring so many fans and blah blah blah, all that.
But I can't remember who the company was that done that. They'd done a lot of venues, and I don't even know if they're still going, but it was pretty grim what they were doing.
I hope it's not still going. But it was back to being a normal venue. Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
Because I think, well, I first met you many years ago. My band supported David Devantney's spirit wife at the Esplanade in Southend.
Oh, yes. Is that no longer there? Am I getting confused?
No, it did. It shut and it sort of moved further up the seafront.
Isn't it
Chinneries.
Esplanade, isn't it?
Esplanade. I don't know.
But Essex, I always think Essex was fertile ground for David Devant. There's something about that county where people loved that sort of emergence of pure difference. They seemed to get it.
I did. We see you. We used to come around and try and watch you as many times as we could back then. And it was, we saw you definitely in both Chelmsford venues, both the Y Club and the Army and Navy, I believe, back in the 90s. Yeah,
because whenever I think of, I think we played in Essex a lot. I think of the A13, and there's a funny sort of metal prefab bridge coming out of London, and I now lecture in art very near that bridge, so it's kind of lovely sort of really living that bridge from another angle. But I always think of it as like going into the dark, mysterious land of Essex. And I recently wrote a fugue for the fugue in A13. There's a mansion house in the middle of an estate in East London called Eastbury Manor, and I was asked to make a piece of art for it, and I walked around it, and I just kept hearing fugue-like music in my head. So I thought, it's near the A13. I need to find out what A13 sounds like. So I found out on Google what A13 was on the guitar, and then composed a fugue in A13, which was really good fun. So that was like, fugue in A13. So in fact, you see this picture here, that's part of it.
Okay.
What I did is I got these wallpaper pasting boards, and I pasted wallpaper onto them, and then made them so you could display the wallpaper upright using the legs of the wallpaper pasting table to keep it upright. And then I connected the music playing device to the wallpaper. So you can sort of probably see there's like this entangled, curvy image, colours and overlaying, and that was like the fugue of the A13. Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. So clearly I have a strong connection to that
wonderful
artery.
Mikey, I always start this podcast with the song with the greatest ever intro.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, going intuitively, I went straight for Pajama-rama by Roxy Music.
Nice.
Do you know that one?
No.
It's just like feels, even thinking about it now, I get this sort of upsurge of vitality, you know, da da dang. It's one of those intros.
Yeah.
Da da dang. And when you make music, as you probably know, you can't always predict whether something's going to sound enormous, but that intro does sound enormous, you know, more than the Who's ding ling ding ling ding ding ding, you know, well, which I can't remember which one that is. It's of that family.
Pimble Wizard.
Yeah, it's of that family, but just manages to somehow sound totally enormous. So, and I don't think Pajama-rama is on either of the first two albums, you know, the Roxy Music. For Your Pleasure, but it's got that sort of Smithsy skip to it as well, the whole track.
Yeah.
Which I love that track, yeah. And I do like songs like Strange Town by The Jam was never on an album. So those non-album singles, yeah, they can be pretty good.
And do you know what? And growing up and obviously watching your band a lot in the kind of midnight. I mean, well, you've got a single that's not on the album, haven't you?
I hope we. What now? You mean?
Way back. I'm going back now because Pimlico wasn't on.
That's right. Yeah, yeah,
the album.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other bands that would do it around then, it was a lot of bands done it in between the first and second album. So Blur done Pop Scene, which is one of my favourite Blur songs.
Yeah.
Oasis done Whatever.
Yeah.
And there was just these kind of bands that had just put this like floating single. The Arctic Monkeys done it recently with Leave Before the Lights Come On, which was probably my favourite track by them.
And well, of course, probably the best of all time is Strawberry Fields.
Oh my God.
That's the floating single. I found it somewhere today because I've been going through all my singles. Because when I was about 9, 10, I started buying 7-inch singles. And
right, we'll get to that. We'll get to that because that's going to be track 4. I want to know this because I saw on Instagram this morning you was flicking through your 7-inch singles, and your love of the 7-inch single is exactly the same as mine. It's my passion.
Okay, Well, as you may have seen on my Instagram 60-second lesson, mate. I love a man called Marshall McLuhan, who was very, very famous, but he had a little theory that we all have this thing called the first love syndrome, in which the technology that carries us through our coming of age is the thing that shapes our sense of context in the world. And for me, that makes sense of everything I do, really, you know, sort of image, melody, text, and then that in an object. Perfect Object, seven-inch single. Yeah.
Yeah. It's... Yeah. It's well, we'll get on to that when we get to the record store track for number four. But in the meantime, well, no, I want to go back to intros quickly, Mikey.
Yeah.
And as an artist, I want to know how you approach the intro in a record.
Yeah.
Then, when you first started releasing records to the recent album, have you changed the way that you write in any way, shape, or form? Because obviously, in the 20 or so years that you've been releasing records, the way that people listen to music's changed greatly. Have you done, have you changed anything to kind of move with that?
Well, no, I think I'm always working blind, like a kind of organism. So it's quite hard for me to see how I've changed. But I do feel like I have, yeah. I kind of think I've improved, but... recently, well, relatively recently, you know, I just sort of became much more aware of how much the Beatles worked and worked and crafted their songs so intricately. And I realised, right, I've got to, I can up my game a bit, you know, so maybe that's come into it. But they were the masters, weren't they, of crafting even the intro, even the outro. If you think about Hard Day's Night, that chord is probably the best ever intro. Now I come to think of it, you know, and people, nerds, trying to unpick what that chord is because it's a layered chord of guitar and keyboard.
Oh, is it?
You know, it's like, what is that chord, man? And then, even at the end of the song, they introduce a sort of reprise of that chord in a slightly more melodic way. So they really did sort of get under the bonnet, so to speak.
Yeah.
If I'm honest, I kind of think intros are a bit of a blind spot for me. Maybe I need to do some homework on my intros. Because I just like being in the middle of things. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but someone maybe I've done a good intro, but I can't remember.
I'm sure you've done plenty, mate.
Yeah.
Track two, Mikey.
Yeah.
The first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Ah. See, I misheard this question. Because I don't remember the first song I remember hearing. Ah. See, I'm going for the first song I remember having an emotional impact on me. And the reason I think this is true is because I'm still slightly embarrassed about admitting how resonant it is with me. And it's a song called Waves by Blancmange. Stu's looking baffled. That's it. That's Blancmange are a synth pop duo.
Blancmange have played the Pink Toothbrush many times.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've heard that tune.
Well, you see, the thing about emotion, isn't it, is it's all about the time when you hear that particular song. And, that song is, you know, what are these waves that are coming over me? This must be my destiny. I mean, it's quite cheesy, but, you know, see, the cynic in me is calling it cheesy, but if I listened to that on the tube going into work or something, I would be sort of having to wipe the tears away because it sort of gets right into me. And
what's the emotion?
Longing. And, I have this sort of feeling at the moment that a lot of music has a sense of longing because it reconnects us with this thing that conceptual reality has cut us off from. And that's a kind of felt understanding of being in the world. And so we kind of grieve our cut-offness from that. And it's a feeling you can't put your finger on. So that song, it has that sort of sublime swelling up feeling. And I love the, you know, it's waves. What are these waves that are coming over me? And that does sort of encapsulate the idea of felt intensities, which you can't put your finger on. I mean, I've experienced that sort of felt intensity as a boy, when I was with my cousins in the cop, you know, my family are from Liverpool. I was in the cop standing and I was literally in the wave and I lost my cousin, but and sort of went down into the swell of the cop. So that passion that I have there is a similar sort of wave of intensity. It's not about a symbolic interpretation or a reading of life. It's just a felt intensity.
I think, but I drew, there's lots of parallels to be drawn, I think, between being at a football match and being at a gig. My days of being a football fan are long gone. But I've been to several big matches and sporting events where the crowd have literally been devoted to a team or an athlete, and it's just as powerful as seeing your favourite band play, your favourite song by them
at
the O2 or wherever.
Yeah, all these things, you can turn them into a sort of data symbolic version of what they are, and that's when it becomes nasty and that you get that bigoted attitude because it's a symbol of what you think you are rather than what you feel you are. And I suppose another, song that would have an emotional impact on me. When I was a little boy, we had a record of the cop choir that, because when in those days, no one had many records. So like we'd have Hard Day's Night or, let's listen to the cop choir. And it was a recording of the cop during a football match. That obviously got under my skin and has an emotional resonance. Yeah.
So was there not loads of music on at home growing up then?
Oh, yeah, there was loads, but not a broad selection, the Beatles or the Cop. We had an early Bee Gees album when there was about 8 of them in the band, and I used to like that a lot, yeah.
And there what was that, kind of Massachusetts time?
Yeah, it had a song, I Started a Joke.
Yeah.
I think that's quite me, but I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like the side of the whole world crying. Yeah. So, the other musical thing, my dad used to sing songs to me to send me to sleep. So he'd play the guitar and often they were quite grisly folk songs, you know.
So your dad was a musician as well?
Well, yeah, he was in bands. Yeah, he actually played drums in one band, I think. And I saw my dad once at the Fairfield Hall in Croydon playing his acoustic guitar on a big stage. I remember, I can still picture it now, and feeling nervous on his behalf. But, yeah.
So it's always like instruments and stuff laying around the house?
Yeah, guitars. I mean, and my dad used to say, at one point, I remember, he sent me to my room and said, go and record all those songs you've been playing around with. Put them down on tape. So it forced me to kind of finish things. And so that was quite good parenting.
Yeah.
Go to your room and record your songs.
Yeah. Okay. So where was that? Where was you born?
I grew up in Horsham, West Sussex. I went to school in Crawley. We could come on to that later. But I was born in Bexhill-on-Sea, which it is kind of like a paradise in my longing memory. Bexhill, sunny.
Yeah.
To many people, it's not that at all. But in me, it is. It's total euphoritopia, largely because I had two sisters who were older than me, and I have a massive memory of them having dressing up parties in the garden with the apple trees and all these beautiful girls dressing up and me, the little brother. So, what's not to like?
Well, you touched on school a moment ago, so let's, for track three, Mikey, I ask guests the song that reminds them of their time at school.
Yeah, Now, I did think I could go with something cool because I, you know, I've got some cool records that I brought during my time at school. But the record that I think produces that sense of what it's like to be at school and the felt intensities and think and discovering girls and passion and friendships and longing, that the song is the theme tune to Grease. Frankie Valli.
One of the greatest intros ever.
Oh, yeah. That's a crafted song. Yeah, and it's quite unlike the rest of the soundtrack, because I was going to go with Summer Nights, but, you know, because that's almost, that's got a sense of that, like, being, because we all had to, like, get a date and go with a girl to the cinema. You know, it was like a thing you had to do. And I went with a girl called Cheryl. And, yeah. And I could, you know. But the song itself doesn't quite evoke that. But the theme to Grease absolutely nails that. And I was listening.
It's an incredible record.
Yeah, yeah. The lyrics, we take conventionality and we throw away conventionality belongs to yesterday, which is not like Summer Loving, is it? You know, it's totally. Yeah. Yeah. And also it's got a really killer drum break in Grease is the word I think I've used because it breaks down to that chunky beat. Yeah.
Yeah. That Frankie Valli fella, he knew how to write a song, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so that one, yeah.
Perfect. So, was you a creative kid at school?
Well, I think creativity is a funny thing because, you know, it's when you're totally within school, for instance, which is quite a conceptual place, it's quite hard to sort of notice that you're creative. My dad was actually my art teacher. We all used to, my friends ended up calling him Dad at school because, so he became known as Dad. And so, yeah, there was a creative environment, but in a sort of academic context. I did, you know, obviously I made music at school and we had bands and dear friends that I made music with. It wasn't until later, and maybe we'll find a way of finding a way into that, that I kind of experienced that sort of oceanic feeling of creativity as something outside of structures such as school. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because for a lot of people, creativity in school is a kind of escape. And I didn't have that opportunity to escape into it because I was in it. You know, my dad was my art teacher.
How was that, having your dad as a teacher at school?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of, well, it was my normal, wasn't it? It was my new normal. But I remember as a kid visiting the art room, and it did feel like a realm of wonder because you'd sort of meet the sixth formers who were out on the roof smoking and things, you know. But by the time I got there, it was kind of more normal, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was you a confident kid?
Well, you know, I grew up with hearing loss, so... yeah, you know, since all my life I've had hearing loss, and I think that sort of shaped the way I interact with people. So I'm not totally outgoing, but nor am I unconfident. Just sort of there, floating in the ether. Yeah, and
are you a driven person?
I think I am, but I don't think that's top of my priorities. You know, it's like being true to the creative spirit is true. So, like, yeah, making sure you finish something is being true to that and creating it and putting it across, sharing it. Learning that those times in life where, you know, choose your battles, isn't it? That's, what, I think, what I'm getting at is... when it's more important to let the creative energy emerge, or for a lot of people, it could be about, oh, this was my idea. I must get my idea across. And that's what driven means to them. But that it doesn't mean that for me. So
You said you floated in between, you know, when I asked if you was confident and stuff. But I mean, when I first saw you perform on stage, and when I saw you perform on stage 20 years later, just before Christmas, you seemed like a very confident young man on stage.
Yeah, well, I think.
Did you like attention?
I think there's that sense of, like, I like the attention that my sister's friends gave me when I was a little boy. But in terms of confidence, it's kind of like, I think I just have something in my wiring which is like, I don't care. I want to share this. So that could be a form of confidence. But I think I always think confidence is a constructed thing. It's like, I'm going, like Boris, you know, he's confident, he's putting himself across. Whereas I'm just like, well, we're all here. This is what I'm like, and this is how it will come out if I do it like this. And it's like sharing a joyful vitality, I suppose. And something in me prevents me from being embarrassed about that. But there are times in my life where I do... You know, we all feel embarrassment or shame. And I was reading recently about there's this lovely writer I know called Simon O'Sullivan, and he was saying, like, a belief in sensation frees us from the shame of feeling of being human. So, you know, it's like embracing sensation. You know, being on stage is feeling and sensing and, yeah.
Hello, I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So, if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off the Beat and Track podcast, and you can listen to all the songs, because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode, so you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. I mean, for someone that you know, like I'm talking about myself, attempted a career in music.
Yeah.
Are you lost in the enjoyment of it when you do it? Because I never was. I wanted to be, but I was always the kind of guy that had organised the stuff, and I was always kind of trying to worry, is that going to sound all right? Is the levels right on this? And if I look back in hindsight now, I just think, oh, idiot. She'd just gone with it. She'd just had the most fun you could have had.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I recognise that completely. And I think it's sort of trying to get into a space where you are as unencumbered as possible. And there are obviously moments on stage where that is broken. But, you know, through experience, and I enjoy that, having that under my belt, it's like, yeah, I know not to react to that. And there was one, the only gig where I got angry was, what's the town on the border of England and Scotland? Is it Carlisle? Is that on the border?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, Devon, we go everywhere and we'd feel this kind love. It's like, just happened. But in Carlisle, one night, you know, we'd grate the ginger carrot and someone threw it back. And it hit me on the head, the carrot. And it was like our first night after a long drive. And I felt pretty riled then. I think I almost didn't come back for an encore. That was... yeah.
Oh, but, amazing. One and only Mariah Carey moment?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the thing is, with Devon... Carl Jung talks about, like, when people meet, there's this sort of alchemy. And we were just flaming lucky. Something happened with all of us together. And it created this sort of bubble of magic where we kind of felt untouchable, not in a sort of gang sense, but in, like, we carried our magic around with us and it gave us this creative confidence. And so, yeah, doing those sorts of gigs.
Yeah. I was at a lot of those, and the first time I saw yous with for those that have never seen David Devon in Spirit Wife, at the time you had Cockney Young and
Iceman,
who yeah. would
I like that Cockney Young. It's actually Cocky Young.
Cocky Young, and was it? Yeah. Sorry. Yes,
but
it is.
I'm enjoying Cockney Young as well.
And. Yeah. And there would be a when you play ginger, there would be a carrot grated on a head in yeah. like quite, if I remember rightly, quite a ferocious manner.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
It was lots of drama. And I just remember them early gigs, and at that time the Lantern was doing the projections and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah,
and it was like, there was no one else doing what yous were doing.
Absolutely,
And it was so visual. And the fact that it wasn't just the visuals, it was backed with
yeah.
killer tunes. It was yeah. perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was one of them bands. Your band was like, I'm try not to sort of blow smoke up your arse here, Mikey, but your band yeah. was one of them bands that I would say to my friends, come and watch this band, trust yeah. me. And then yeah. it never, ever ended with them going, that all right. They would walk out going, that was incredible, wasn't it? And,
yeah.
And it was. It just, that's why... You know, I booked you to come and play the Toothbrush. It was like, yeah. right, people yeah. need to see this band.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Iceman and Cocky Youngun were phenomenal. I think, people would get Iceman and me confused in reviews and say, and the vessel grates a carrot. And, because like that was Iceman. Iceman was much more of a craftsperson theatrically than I ever was, and he was sort of quite good at drama at school, but very overtly dramatic, which isn't right for a career in acting, but perfect, as he will admit, for David Devon and his Spirit Wife. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's the thing with Devon, is I'd kind of thought, oh, I'm going to be an artist illustrator. I'm good at songs, but, you know, I kind of went down this road of, like, conventional indie and meeting people. I was at Chelsea School of Art. Lovely people. We made good songs. But then in Devon, we were told we had to be a theatrical band if we wanted our gig at the Brighton Festival. And that just, like, put me in a totally different realm. I could write about anything and write in any way that I liked and sort of draw on everything that I felt passionate about musically, rather than, oh, I'm going to be the next... So, and that's what happened. You know, like, some of our songs would have felt ridiculous to younger version of me, like Madame Devant, are you there? But the chords in that, I still love, you know. It's like the passion. So, yeah.
Well, I'm looking, obviously we're doing this over Zoom, so I can see in your room there's an array of records and 7-inch singles behind you. Track 4, Mikey, the first song you bought from a record shop.
Yeah, yeah. I've got that here. I could show it you. Yeah. Can you see that?
Yeah. I can. One of Essex's finest.
What a waste. I remember there's a shop. I'm struggling to remember the name of the shop, but it was a proper little record shop. And that was the first time that I got my own money and I went and bought a single. And I think I must have heard it on the radio.
For listeners that we haven't said what it is, it is What a Waste, but it's by Injury and the Blockheads.
What a Waste. But yeah, yeah. And I try not to listen to it too much because it has a sort of magic atmosphere, which if you listen to it just like a song, it's not the same. But the sort of the frequencies coming out of the grooves of the record are otherworldly. You know, something, it's more than the sum of its parts, I suppose, is what I'm saying. It's just, because a lot of my friends love the Blockheads, and I like the Blockheads, but that particular single has a special atmosphere. And that, I suppose, could be partly to do with the fact that it's the first record I bought, but I don't think it is. I took it into school. We used to have a music teacher called Mr. Willie. and he was a very conventional man, but as part of his lessons, he would let us bring in a record and play it in the music lesson. So I took in What a Waste. I must have been 10, I think, if that. And we put it on. And then a boy called, I think it might have been Peter Philippa, it might have been this other chap. I can't remember his name. Anyway, he started talking. So it's like, get the intro. Like I'm in the magic space. Peter Flepper talks. Mr. Willie takes it off and goes, well, that was a waste, wasn't it? Yeah, he took it off and used the teacher tone to discount it. Luckily, it didn't scar me, but it might have sent me on a mission to try and transmit that frequency of wonder through my own music.
Go on, sorry, Mikey.
No. I'm just if that's what the structures of the powers that be do to music, that might be partly what's motivating me.
Well, record shops. A special place for you?
I wouldn't say I was ever one of those what do they call them? Crate diggers. Yeah, no. For me, it was always upstairs at Boots, the chemist. They had the top 40 singles and I would go in there. I used to think it was weekly, but maybe it was like every one or two or three weeks I'd go and I'd get a single from Boots when I'd saved up. So that takes me back to the 7-inch single, you know. That so like between the age of 10 and 14, I suppose, was when I was most intensely into 7-inch singles. But
I never ask guests this, but seeing as I'm talking to an artist as well as a musician, what was your favourite sleeve of your 7-inch singles?
That's a tough question. I think, I'm not sure it's here actually, but the original cover of Rock Lobster, which is it's the same cover as the first album.
Is it yellow?
It's just yellow and it's got them on it. looking amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got a lot of the things that I've intuitively adopted myself, you know, wigs, clothing, moustaches, bright, saturated colour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of them bands that I guess at the age that I am, they're forever going to be the band that done Love Shack. Which is a great record. It just got played to death.
Yeah.
But the single that followed that, Rome, I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
But you go back to that early stuff and Rock Lobster being a prime example, that's a fucking insane record, and it builds and builds and builds and loses its absolute fucking mind at the end, and it's so intense and brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's an example. I mean, you were describing Devont as a band. No one else was doing that. No one told us to do that. And it's like the B-52s. You look at those early performances, it's like no one told them to make songs like that. They just made it up.
Yeah.
But with a real eclectic passion, with, it's a really insane mix of sort of soulful intensity, funny, cut-and-paste humour, but done with total conviction. I love it. And it's much more rehearsed than I ever realised, I think, as a young person now. If I look back at their videos, it's like, wow, you've really worked on that. And
there's a great documentary called Athens GA that I had on VHS somewhere, and it's a lot about the I think it's called the 40 Watt Club. And it was the kind of the, that was where the B-52s played, like, were from and played their early shows. It's documenting the kind of rise of the B-52s, which at the same time was just around the time that REM were forming in the same and playing in the same venue, and there's just loads of bands that all come out at that time that played that venue. So it was a really good documentary, but I've never seen it on TV, and I've never sort of seen it on DVD. But yeah, it was an old VHS I had knocking about, and it was fascinating. Yeah. They were an incredible band of B-52s.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'm kind of with you. After Whammy, I think, or Bouncing Off the Satellites, I think I grew older and less sort of less fanny, you know, less loyal. So like Love Shack, it didn't enter my radar. That it was like it was in another universe completely.
Yeah, it was a different sounding band by then, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Track five, Mikey, the song that soundtracked your time clubbing.
Yeah, this is a funny one. The one I've chosen is Turn Off the Lights, and I can't remember the name of the artist. I'm gonna have to click on my Facebook account, because I was thinking about this. We used to go clubbing when I went to art school. I was in a halls of residence in Battersea. And I made friends with a chap called Mike England. And I made friends with him.
Great name.
Yeah, great name. And I saw him at art college, well, in the halls of residence. And he dressed like a complete mod, you know, it's like, but he had a sort of quiff as well. So he's very individual, quirky chap. And I was very drawn to him because of his style. And this song is by Larry Young. It's called Turn Off the Lights. It's a rare groove track.
Right.
So, I seem to have... I'm back online now. Yeah, so he would take me off to basement clubs in the centre of London, and we'd get the night bus. And they'd be quite sparsely populated. But Mike was from the north of England, and this is like post-rationalising. I was able to look back and go, wow, that hit you. You were doing sort of northern soul. Mm. He was introducing me to northern soul dancing. So we'd go to these basement clubs in Soho. I can't remember what they were called. You know, there'd be like 10 people there. He taught me my best dance moves
In
these basement clubs. And yeah, I think I was a little bit in awe of him. And yeah, he was like a very, he was quite small like me, you know, compact person. And he'd do these moves, which I sort of subsequently realised were Rare Groove dance moves.
Right.
Were Northern Soul dance moves.
Right.
And there's a great film made by Mark Leckie, which is called Fiorucci Made Me Hardcore. It's like an art film, and it's got like slowed down Northern Soul clubs. And a lot of, you know, with Northern Soul, a lot of their dancing is just sort of, it's just being there dancing, and then every now and then you go and do your move.
Yeah.
And the one that he taught me is like you sort of go down into a crouch, and as you're doing so, you put one leg up and you clap under it, and yep. then you spin and come up round. And because I was young enough at the time, I sort of learnt that. And it stayed with me in the cerebellum. Yeah, it's like...
I went to a Northern Soul night about 2 years ago, and they had, I think his name was Dave Everson, who was one of the original Wigan DJs, DJing. And it was interesting, as someone that's been a club DJ for 30 years, hearing that no music was mixed, it was just still chat in between the songs, which was glorious.
Wow, amazing, yeah.
And... But I didn't have the stones to have a dance. I was just there was too many people that clearly knew what they were doing, and yeah. it was almost intimidating.
Well, what is funny is how I think Mike England, if you're out there, Mike, hello and sending love. I got into this space where I felt confident to dance. I didn't question it, whereas I can go to a wedding. And I won't feel that intensity that I want to dance and show my Northern Soul moves. But I think there's a bit of me conflating stuff. So I don't know if they ever played this turn off the lights at one of those clubs. But the Rare Groove sound is definitely from that mid-80s era. So maybe they did. You know, it's got a killer bass line. So the groove and the bass line is something Devont managed in our song Everything Fits Into Place. And I've revisited it recently in soundtracks to some of my installations. I thought, oh yeah, just like a bass and the groove. Yeah, let's do a bit of that. So
what did you want from clubbing, Mikey?
Think what I'm sort of conveying is that I don't. People ask, "What is desire? What do you want?" I think I was just like, "Do what comes, and experience it." I mean, I think there was that sense of a person of about 19, 18, 19, 20, where I was a bit wide-eyed and still discovering the world. And so what I wanted was maybe, find your bearings, or finding wonder. And those basement clubs certainly had that, But it wasn't a particularly large scene. It was just getting the night bus and go and do some dancing and then get the night bus home.
Lovely. Track 6, Mikey, a favourite song from an artist from your home county.
Yeah, now I this one stumped me for a bit because I'm from Sussex, and I was like, "Oh, what Genesis?" And then it became obvious. But then I must admit, I don't like to do this. I googled musicians from Sussex.
I'll guarantee most people that have been on here done that as well.
Apparently, I've forgotten his first name. James, the guitarist from The Damned, lived in Worthing. What's his first name, Stu? Fill in for me here. I want to say David, but that's the goalkeeper from Liverpool.
Dave Rainey and Sensible, Scabies.
He's the guitarist. For many people, he was the damned for a while, you know.
Mm. I noticed when you was talking earlier on one of your videos, you said one of the most important records.
Yeah.
Oh, you're probably about to say that now, aren't you, actually? I don't know why I'm about to
It's
jump
Brian,
in now.
Brian James.
Right.
And he, you know, because I've used Google, he was born in Hammersmith, but he lived in Worthing as a young person. And he played at this festival called Fun City, P-H-U-N City, in 1970 in Worthing. And it had MC5 playing.
Wow.
And he played at that festival. So it's kind of like he got that out there and up for it spirit of that music. Maybe before anyone else, you know, because to a lot of people, I think the Damned encapsulate a certain absurd eccentricity and energy that punk has in a way that, you know, the Clash obviously don't and the Pistols did in a more arch way, but the Damned sort of embodied it much more intuitively.
Going back to track one and the song with the greatest intro, the most common choice for that is New Rose.
Okay, yeah.
It's been, a lot of people have chosen that.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm glad I didn't. But Love Song's got a good intro as well, hasn't it?
What a record.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I mean, the song that I've chosen, what's the category?
A song from your home county.
Yeah, yeah. So I was going to, because I love this record, Smash It Up by The Damned. And so it's quite a good chance to shoehorn it in because Brian James lived in Worthing. And and was clearly influenced by this festival, Fun City, in Worthing. And so, yeah, did punk in Britain happen because of that? Worthing, yeah, the birthplace of punk. But Smash It Up, for me, has a similar sort of magic atmosphere to What a Waste. And I didn't actually buy it myself. I was given it on my birthday by one of my sister's grown-up boyfriends. And at that time, I remember I just sort of found out about B-sides. And this came out in 79. So I would have been... 79, that's my 11th birthday. So he gave me that for my 11th birthday. And I said, oh, was it for the A-side? And he said, yeah, of course it is, yeah. But the B-side is Burglar, which is much more comedic and vaudevillian. Yeah. It's funny, but it doesn't have a sort of magical atmosphere. But Smash It Up, it's euphorotopian. You know, I just feel that upsurge of optimism and destruction and creation all at once. Yeah. In a way... that it's also got this the mix of it as a single, I don't hear it quite the same on the album. So there's something about the frequencies in that mix. And I once mentioned that to Rat Scabies because he was managing a band that supported me when I was Mr. Solo. And he was a bit nonplussed by my suggestion that there was any sort of difference.
Yeah.
But, I do maintain that I think, you know, simple things in a mix can create a different magic atmosphere. That is quite frustrating for musicians, I suppose, because you can't always control that.
Yeah.
It's not just about how good's the song, man. You know, it's this magic you create through frequencies.
It's so weird. I just, the Damned just passed me by as a kid. And I think I'm 47, so I think like hearing my first, I think I would, I'll tell you when I first heard of the Damned, when they were on the Young Ones. and I remember seeing them on the Young Ones.
Yeah.
But they were already in their sort of goth phase by then.
Oh, you know, Louise.
That was the first Damned record I owned, because I bought their cover of Eloise.
Yeah.
But obviously by then I just thought Captain Sensible was just this really funny guy that was on kids' TV that was just writing these really funny songs.
Happy Talk, yeah. I mean, all.
But I will
great.
Say that Glad It's All Over still holds up. That's a great record.
Yeah, absolutely. Splendid stuff. I was about to. Like, I had the same singing tutor as Dave Vanian. And, because when you get on a major record label, they go, well, go off to the singing tutor, young man. And it fucks you up for about 10 years. And then you rediscover, your own voice again. My singing tutor, Glyn Jones, lovely Welshman, he's very effective because he's taught me how to protect my voice, I think. But you can hear him in Dave Vanian has got the Glyn style.
Yeah.
Where you keep your apple down, Buck. Keep your apple down. You protect. Yeah. So, but I have a lot of respect for the Damned. And yeah, I guess there are similarities that are purely sort of happenstance, like Dave Vanian's makeup and what I ended up doing. I never thought, you know what, I'm going to copy Dave Vanian's dark eyes. But I suppose there's only so many things a bloke can do with makeup, unless you're David Bowie, I suppose. but I think
you've done well.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm being... that's a naughty diffidence. Yeah, diffidence isn't a good thing. Yeah.
I've never heard that word. Mikey, explain diffidence to me.
It's kind of like a sort of... is it a feigned lack of commitment? Yeah, oh, I don't mind. You know, I think that... Yeah. So I'm kind of careful not to be diffident. I think it's probably because I had a school report that mentioned it. Yeah.
Okay, last track, Mikey. A song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
Oh, yeah.
You can play DJ now, mate.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I was going to tell you about the only time I've DJed at a club. It was the only time I can remember DJing at a club. Because I have a friend who's a very good DJ. He was in the Low Fidelity All-Stars, and he's great. Matt Harvey, or I think he's DJ Stone. He's a great DJ. He DJed alongside me, and I was DJing at this club, local club called Champagnes. And I was playing the record, and he was talking to me. I couldn't hear him. I was going, what are you saying? And so I lifted the needle up so I could hear him.
How did that work out for you?
It was fine, but that sort of sums me up, I think. Me looking at that going, oh, you're like that, are you? You're so you're in another place. Yeah. Yeah. Being DJ, there's a band from Sweden that I met. I'm going around the houses here. I met them. We used to have a little basement studio in Great Russell Street, and there was Mikey and Nick Abrams used to make videos for us, and they made a video for this band called Comeda, K-O-M-E-D-A, who are sort of like a more poppy Stereo Lab. And I met them, and they were all lovely, and they gave me their album. And then it's like one of those things, like 10 years later, I played it and fell in love with it and was like, wow, this is amazing. And it's a female vocalist. The song, I don't think it's called There's a Place. So I'm going to have to Google it, what the actual name of the song is.
Okay, because we do a Spotify playlist to accompany every podcast. Yeah. So,
This is a song, you know, in terms of later life, I heard it, and it had the same sort of effect as What a Waste or Smash It Up, but different, you know, Comeda, and There's a place. And I kind of fell in love with the singing. It's female vocalist. And I find that intriguing, that I can fall in love with this voice. I mean, I met the girl, but I didn't fall in love with her at the time. It's only subsequently I've been listening to it, and it's kind of like Nico.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's got that Nico, and they are a good example of a band that construct their songs very, very well and still manage to remain sounding pop, yeah? Yeah. So, Comeda, More Is More.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and it's... I think they're a great band, and they're, like, undiscovered. It should have been massive, that album. You know, the whole album's brilliant. But it's slightly jazz-inflected pop, but with a bit of Pavement and a bit of everything in there, yeah.
Nice.
And, yeah.
Okay, so... What's going on in the world of Mikey at the moment, then, aside from lockdown? How have you found that?
Well, to be honest, Stu,
I've seen you out in your garden making videos.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like I am all the time, is like make stuff, and that's how I want to be, and that seems to, it's great because it's kind of like swept the land, this let's make stuff vibe. Yeah, I like to do that anyway, and it's kind of nice that there's a more open context for just making stuff and celebrating, like making and connecting, and yeah, it was brilliant. I've done a couple of Mr. Solo things because David DeBont and his spirit wife have been doing live Zoom songs, and then someone said, "Oh, is Mr. Solo going to come back?" And when they asked me that, I was like, "Oh no." He's cryogenically frozen. I can't bring back Mr. Solo. But then I did, and I remembered the love of that he kind of brings up. You know, it's like a singular plurality, you know, Mr. Solo. But he's the opposite, really. It's just like connecting, and all these lovely people sent in their collaborations that I've put into the Mr. Solo montage.
Wonderful.
There's a particularly great lackadaisical signing from a lady called D, and I was just like, wow. Yeah, she signed it was kind of made up signing for the song Homesick Home, and which I thought was interesting, you know, having been someone who's lived with, what, you know, deafness is hearing loss all their life, and I've always like shied away from signing because that's like admitting I'm really deaf, and in later life I've got a different kind of hearing loss which is like added to that, so yeah, I'm having to confront it more bravely, I think. And this was like a gentle way of doing that. So yeah, okay. Being creative, making stuff. And Devont, we've recorded a new song, Taking My Time, which is from our early shows. We used to do this song, Taking My Time, and our manager, Big Steve Fishman, always used, because he was from LA, and he would say, yeah, that's the song that's going to break America. And that didn't even get recorded, you know, when we got a deal on any of our labels. So we went back to it recently, and we've recorded what I think is quite a majestic version of it. And I think it's got that frequency magic going on.
Where can people hear that? Is that available to be listened to anywhere?
It is, and you can buy it from our website. Our website is called Cut Out and Keep Me, which is the name of our current album, Cut Out and Keep Me. So you go there and you can hear Taking My Time, which is quite apt, I suppose, for lockdown.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And I used to find, you know, because I grew up loving songs and songwriting and like being immersed in that world, And that song is literally 2.5 chords. So there might have been a bit of me that was like, no, this can't be a big song, you know, because it's just 2.5 chords. Yeah. But it's enormous. It's got like a magic atmosphere. And we've made a video for that, which is on the David Devont and His Spirit Wife YouTube page. So if you search for that, and that's like a lockdown special, yeah.
Well, what I'll do when I put this out, I'll add links to all of those places, and I'll tag you in it on the social medias, if that's all right with you.
Absolutely, yes, of course,
lovely,
yeah.
Mikey, it's been lovely chatting to you.
Oh, it's been a total pleasure. Yeah. I was slightly worried about, because picking favourites is quite a difficult thing for me, because I don't, you know, I'm not a crate digger. I don't make lists of things. So like making myself make those decisions is fun. But
yeah. We're all aware they could change on any given day, though, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Although, Smash It Up will always be in my top 10. And there are certain things which don't change.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Mikey, thank you so much.
Thank you, Stu. I shall let you get on and do send me the links, and I'll promote it on the David Devont Facebook
stuff.
Page.
Thanks, yeah. Mate.
All right.
There you go. Thank you very much, Mikey. Thanks for listening, people. It was really nice to have a catch-up with him. When we finished recording, we carried on having a natter, and we're arranging another little Zoom catch-up with a mutual friend soon, which is smashing. It's the best thing about doing these podcasts. You get to connect with these people that, you know, that you've met before, and sometimes you connect with people that you've never met before. And when you talk to someone about their life and you know, their passion for music, at the end of that hour, there's a nice bond there. So it's one of the best things about doing this. And I couldn't do it if it wasn't for you lovely lot streaming, downloading, subscribing and supporting. So thanks massively to you lot. I'm back next week. If you can't wait till next week, have a rummage in the archives. Other than that, sign up and support the podcast via Patreon and get stuck in, because there's about 100 episodes over there as well. So any support is much appreciated. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Oh yeah, sorry, I've butted in yet again. I just want to quickly tell you about this magazine. It's called Pod Bible. Now, Pod Bible is the new essential guide to podcasts. It's put together alongside Spotify and Acast, and it's a one-stop shop to tell you all about the podcasts you maybe know about, but definitely about a load of the podcasts that you probably don't know about that we think you should know about. I mean, in the first edition, there's interviews with Adam Buxton, interviews with Craig Parkinson, there's features on Jade Adams, and there's just an abundance of information about so many exciting podcasts that are out there. Also, Spotify have given us these amazing little codes. So if you do get a print copy, you can just turn on your Spotify on your phone, scan the little code, and it just automatically opens up the podcast on your listening device. How good's that? If you haven't managed to get a print copy, then just go over to www.podbiblemag.com and read it online, because the digital version is all over there and it's all free. So every other month there'll be a new edition out. So go and have a look and support us on the social medias as well. Podbiblemag.com.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whippin.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing.
Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.